Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thanks so much for joining us, everybody. We're live worldwide on Close Up Radio Live. This is part two of our very engaging and eye-opening and riveting conversation with author Eve Carson. Eve is the author of the book Simple, Safe, and Secret, The 1981 Murder of Joan L. Webster. Eve seeks to keep alive the memory of her sister-in-law, Joan Webster, a Harvard student who perished in November of 1981 under very suspicious circumstances. And despite being a cold case and meeting resistance at every turn, Eve continues to seek justice for Joan. She investigated the investigation itself, and that's where the problems were. It was a fabricated story, according to Eve, verifiably false. Authorities even today have circled the wagons to cover up malfeasance, and there are a lot of things that can contribute to authorities being involved. In this two-part series, Eve has been offering a more detailed perspective surrounding this decade-long cold case. Some of the material that Eve is discussing is decades old. It includes the cab driver at Logan Airport that last saw Joan alive, observations surrounding the Webster family, and how the documents that she was able to acquire don't match up with the investigation. She's also concluding with her views on how this case can and should be resolved, and to be silent would be complicit. Knowledge is very empowering and has been healing in some regards. Eve actively calls for justice even to this day. In fact, she's in the process of starting a nonprofit called Victims of Justice Speak. And she's been getting a lot of positive feedback from our listeners, folks familiar with the case, as well as folks who just are engaged with the conversation, which I think is incredible. We're also going to be hearing some audio clips exclusively on this episode of Close Up Radio Live. But first, let's welcome back for part two of our series, special guest author Eve Carson. Eve, welcome back to the show. It's a pleasure to have you with us again.
Good evening, Jim. It's a pleasure to be back and hopefully bring some more detail and, you know, ways to really resolve situations like this. It's empowering.
Absolutely. Very important. You got it. And as a recap for our listeners, maybe you can explain the purpose of joining us today.
My sister-in-law, Joan Webster, was a murder victim in 1981. Technically, she was a missing person for 8.5 years before her remains were found, and the state had promoted a theory that, as I have dug into records and done a lot of research, learned that that story that they promoted was absolutely false. That causes a great deal of harm and leaves some people very vulnerable. It's important for people to have a voice. It's important for victims and loved ones to have truthful answers.
It really is. Absolutely right. And that's something, again, that you've rolled up your sleeves and you've been digging in with all of it. The focus, too, in a more specific way, what would you like the focus to be on episode?
The focus should be on who actually obstructed this case, both past and present. When it began, it was being obstructed by really a small nucleus of people, two police officers who were in charge of the investigation, a prosecutor, and the Webster family. They all were promoting what was a false narrative, even though they had exculpatory evidence in their hands, in their possession. Today, the current custodian of Joan's case is the Essex County District Attorney's Office, who appear to have circled the wagons. They have provided no evidence that supports the theory that was promoted it still is promoted by some, until you have authorities who are going to be earnest and honest in dealing with victims of such injustice or malfeasance, it really leaves you in a very difficult spot, and in some cases, for some people, a dangerous position.
Yeah, that's really something, I tell you. It's quite amazing. Do you feel that your daughters are being threatened? We have some clips, too, that we want to share.
Yes, I do believe that my daughters have been in a position where they feel threatened. I presented to the district attorney, the current one, a letter that made allegations against their father, Steve, Joan's brother. If those indeed are true allegations, or if I understand them correctly, then there are further secrets that are being concealed, ones that would put my children at risk, certainly if the family secrets came out. Just to highlight a couple of things that the family did do, one of my daughters actually confided to family counseling that she felt pressure to keep me alive. And I also received an email from George Webster on Christmas Eve 2012 when I was questioning the discrepancies I was finding in the records. He emailed back a profanity-laced email and at the end of it wished me to die. These are really concerning things. So the most vulnerable people are the individuals who have connections unknowingly to people who have not been truthful about murder.
Scary stuff, I tell you. And we do have the first clip, which is Caring for Daughters. We'll play that, and we'll come back and continue our conversation.
Only get out if you continue to probe as deeply as you probe, and now turn me onto this, and I start probing.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's going to be, well, we're like this with the Websters. At which point your kids would be at risk if you accept, you know, your proposition.
I don't know that I agree with that. I've worked with an abuse advocate that indicated that my best measure to protect my children is to be vocal. You don't shy away from bringing out issues that could relate to abuse, ever. And I won't. You know, everything that I brought forward, both in that past meeting and today, there are other things that can corroborate what I have said or documents I brought forward, every single one of them, including the letter my daughter wrote. There are counselors that was taken to, and people that verify that letter was written by my daughter and the implications of that.
Tell us about that riveting clip, Eve.
I discovered a letter that had been written by my daughter. It was tucked in a drawer to counselors. I sought immediate help because it did make allegations against Joan's brother that would be felonies, you know, if indeed they are, if I am understanding them correctly. I will tell you that the system totally failed. But for the Essex County District Attorney to blatantly ignore not only that document, but also corroborating evidence and contemporaneous evidence when you've got an unsolved homicide in the family is very disturbing.
I would imagine, absolutely, absolutely. We have another clip as well, continuing in that vein, Fearing for Daughters, and we'll play that now.
Knowledge is power. As I started to say, you know, you had a police officer. I'm not the first person to come and kind of blow the whistle on family members and loved ones. This is a very high-wire act I walk on because they're also my daughter's family. I don't like seeing them hurt through this, but they can't heal unless right now they're being told that I'm evil and I'm delusional and I'm just this awful person. I'm anything but.
I'm a good, decent human being.
I don't think I can speak for both of us when we don't question your good faith and we don't question your intelligence or anything like that. So.
You know, what I notice is you have a certain composure and steadiness and steadfastness in these clips, which you have anyway in what you're doing. But, you know, some people being in those situations when you have, you know, that type of person on the other side of the desk, they would be shuffling papers and nervous and stumbling on the words and all the rest and even probably forget what they're saying. You seem to have this composure and this steadiness. Does that come from the fact that you have facts and that you are so determined to get to the bottom of this?
Absolutely. You know, I will tell you initially as I started to uncover pieces that had been hidden for so many years, there were evenings I couldn't get out of bed or was sobbing so hard. But if you stay stuck in those elements of grief or confusion or concern, you don't move forward. I am a pragmatic person. I wanted the facts. I wanted to see them in front of me. I laid out a spreadsheet so I could see names, dates, times, and try to blend them with the personal knowledge that I have within the family and the type of personalities I was dealing with. So I'm very confident. I have the facts. I have the documents.
It's amazing, really. It really is. Can you describe the credibility and the painstaking effort in getting these records? And we'll play the audio clip as well.
Okay. Yeah, I've been working on digging out records since 2006. One thing that I learned was that there was no single repository. All of the information was kept. There were 26 different agencies, departments, or investigators I was able to identify. I was collecting documents from a wide variety of sources. But I have FBI reports, certified court documents, police reports, personal documents, and interviews. All from verifiable sources. Many of these documents, the current custodian could have obtained themselves. When I initially contacted the Essex County District Attorney's Office, they were actually deficient in a large number of documents. I've provided a great deal of them to them. And, you know, if you're turning away a family member, someone who has knowledge from the case from the beginning, who is providing them verifiable documents, and they're ignoring it, there's a problem.
There sure is, absolutely. Here's that third clip, District Attorney, compliment.
Forgive me, I have a lot of documents, and
that's okay.
This is not the most pleasant thing I've ever had.
No, I can imagine it. But your attention to detail is impressive in the sense that I know you know what you're talking about.
I know exactly what I'm talking about.
It's really incredible stuff, and again, just talking about the resilience, it continues. Here's the rest of the clip.
Here's what I'm proposing. Should you want to share with us your findings, and I applaud your efforts because, quite frankly, very impressive the way you put this together. I'm giving you our word that we'll look at it. If there's something, some path that we think is worthy of going down, we'll do that. I'm not so certain we'd ever tell you the net result of our travel down that path unless we thought we were going to be able to really parlay it into something at various things. Mm-hmm. And we may even ask you further questions to say, hey, did you uncover this when you were looking at this issue and what did you find about it? That very frequently happens.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I propose to do here.
I appreciate that.
And I'm not making an empty promise that something will ever come out of this. I wouldn't promise you that because that's just not fair to you, you know, nor is it realistic, given unless something really significant jumped out and we thought we could confront somebody or do something, you know, we wouldn't do it. This is not the way we do it. But you made a very credible presentation, and you have my attention, that's for sure. And that's what I propose to do about it.
That's really amazing. Who was impacted when these investigators tell a false story in contradiction to the documents?
It's such a domino effect. I know for myself personally, I was left extremely vulnerable. You know, they left me vulnerable to people that I did not realize were not being truthful and forthright with me about the case. Joan's parents and her siblings. The siblings to this day still maintain that posture, promoting the false theory. The former prosecutor wrote a book about it. He's documented it. That's evidence in a cold murder case. But my daughters, most importantly, are the ones I am concerned about because I don't have an understanding of what they do or do not believe. I know what the family has influenced, and I know they have influenced my children in a variety of ways, including money that they have held over their heads. It's very frightening, and if they are aware of more circumstances in Joan's case, then they probably are scared to death to open their mouths about the secrets that linger there.
It is something really, it's an extraordinary state, you know, case and story. How does this case get resolved?
You know, Jim, every crime has a solution. Finding the answers is not always easy. You have to have the perseverance and commitment to do it. Realistically, it would require an earnest and honest group of authorities to fully investigate the case. I've not asked them to disbar anybody or charge anyone. What I have asked for that district attorney's office to do is to discredit the false story that was out there. But I can pinpoint precisely where they should look. Recovered the eyewitness description of the man with Joan at Logan. I began to compare it. Initially, I compared it to the individuals who were promoting the Leonard Paradiso boat theory. That would be George and Eleanor Webster, the former prosecutor Tim Burke, two police officers, Andrew Palumbo and Carmen Tamaro. I then compared it to individuals that knew with certainty where Joan was going to be that night. That the only four people I know with certainty are George and Eleanor Webster, Ann Webster, her sister, and also Joan. One person stands out in that. One person that I cannot cross off a list of suspects as the man that was with Joan and maneuvered her to a different car. And that's George Webster. There are two people who knew the correct cause of death with correct detail more than 7 years before Joan's skeleton surfaced. And those are the two police officers who worked very closely with George and Eleanor Webster and with the prosecutor. Carmen Tamaro was the original person who came up with the boat theory. That's documented in the letter. It was 4 months before he interrogated a jailhouse snitch, Robert Bond, who came forward. But his statement, his written statement, and a transcript of an interview he did with the Massachusetts State Police, both can be verified to be false on numerous points. The one thing that was correct was the cause of death with correct detail. So it's the two police officers who knew that. That's where you start. Those individuals had information that would have only been known to the killer or someone complicit in the crime. And you've got this small little circle, this small little nucleus of people who were promoting this. George and Eleanor Webster, Andrew Palumbo, Carmen Tamaro, and Tim Burke. That's the nucleus. That's where you start.
Really, it's extraordinary. It's every time we chat, it's just untangling the spider web of it all.
Yeah.
Beside your book, have you found other ways, in addition to being with us on Close Up Television Radio, which we're happy about, to help spread that word? What are some other ways that you've tried to raise awareness?
I do quite a bit of blogging, really bringing out details in the case. I've done articles. As you said, I've done the book. This is actually the second book. The first book was kind of a journal type of entry, just kind of logging everything to try and sort out how confusing all of this was. And I've rewritten it to make it clearer for people to follow what happened in the case. I am also in the process of setting up a foundation called Victims of Injustice Speak, or VOICE. What I really want for people to understand, it is important to be a voice. It's important to trust your instincts, follow where the information will lead you. But in certain cases, such as mine, there are not the organizations out there to provide support to victims of public corruption. And when authorities are putting out a false story, that is public corruption. They endanger people. There really are very few avenues. I mean, you can sue somebody for spilling a hot cup of coffee. You can't hold anyone accountable. The Essex County District Attorney's Office, you know, the decision sits in one person's hands, whether they do anything with a case or not. There's really no recourse. They give you a chain where you can follow, but most people just kind of ignore it. They just abide by what the authorities themselves are telling them, and people get shuffled under the rug.
That's really amazing. So many different levels. And again, congratulations on creating the foundation Victims of Injustice Speak. It's very, very important. Tell us, in regards to the book, I'd love to delve into that a little bit here. Simple, Safe, and Secret, the 1981 Murder of Joan L. Webster. Maybe you can recap and share some more about the book itself.
The book steps you through, you know, the time leading up to Joan's disappearance, what was going on at the time. I do reveal some things that were known only to the family. For example, George Webster traveled that weekend. Now, I remember that from the time because I felt so bad for Joan's mother, who was alone when she got the call. But it was corroborated in a news article, a quote from Eleanor Webster herself. Other people didn't know that Joan had planned to have a guest over Thanksgiving break, kind of a meet the parents. Those are things that I knew. Those are little pieces that I could put in. Another comment, things that I bring out, on Christmas morning after Joan disappeared, we were in New Jersey with George and Eleanor, and George kind of matter-of-factly walked into the living room to hand out presents and said, well, she's gone, we have to move on. There was such stoicism. No one cried. I cried. I was a mess.
Yeah.
You know, just odd behaviors that I don't try to determine how someone reacts and responds to grief. We all do it differently. However, going back and being able to piece things now with the actual facts, it raises real concerns about what was going on. What did the family know already? Who were they protecting? Was George involved himself? I doubt that George Webster actually landed the blow to Joan's head. He was a smaller man. But if indeed I am correct, if one of the police officers was involved, he was a very large man, and he could have landed just an incredible injury to the right side of her skull. It would have killed Joan instantly. So I step people through that. I step people through an entangled case that I believe was meant to muddy the waters and to pile on the man they were accusing. I step through his trial. Absolutely, the documents support that was a wrongful conviction. They were trying to clean house with all of their cases and just nail somebody who was vulnerable. He was vulnerable to the accusations. He was a parolee. But there's no indication whatsoever that he murdered Joan. I do not believe he murdered the other victim, Marie Iannuzzi, and other cases that since that time they have tried to pile on him. I found no evidence he murdered anyone.
Our listeners might be saying, why Joan? Why would Joan be targeted? Why would this happen to Joan, the Harvard student, so much promise? With all the investigation and everything happening, why do you feel Joan was the subject of all of this and the target?
If the motive is related in any way to the letter that I found with allegations of abuse against her brother, Steve, she would have known it. She would have known about abuse issues in the family. At the time that Joan disappeared, I was pregnant. Now, I had a miscarriage the same night that Joan disappeared. But if there were issues like that, and it did crop up in another family member, a cousin, then I would be the logical person she would have told. And whether I could never prove that, whether it was or wasn't, because Joan is gone now. However, I'm not going to leave that stone unturned. I am most interested in protecting my daughters and giving Joan the respectful peace that she deserves.
Which is so important. You feel that all the legal professionals and law enforcement are corrupt?
No, not at all. I'm a law-abiding citizen. I know that there were officers involved in this case who were very committed. They were very dedicated. It still haunts some officers that have been able to reach out to me. But when you do get the bad apples impacting a case, it has devastating impacts. And as I said before, I'm not interested in bringing out dirty secrets or dirty laundry about the Webster family, but these secrets deal with felony murder and potential felony abuse by Joan's brother. That's
really
not
amazing.
Something to be quiet about.
No, absolutely not. What is, and I'm sure we'll be catching up with you down the line as well, what is your hope for the listeners who've been following along? We also did a recent television video interview in our studios, and the team is working on that production right now, and that'll be available for viewing soon. This juncture, what do you hope the casual listener to these conversations will be left with?
I hope people will learn to listen when people speak out. You know, the answers don't always come where you want them to come. You know, answers in a murder case, they're not going to be good answers. But you have to listen to what people share. I read an article recently about a missing young woman, also in the same New England area. Maura Murray was her name. And one of the quotes in the article was from the mother of the missing woman. And she indicated that authorities don't necessarily listen to the people who are closest to the situation, family members, close friends, whatnot, what was going on. I know the Websters really took charge of this investigation. I can see it in the documents, their hands on things, rather than taking a look at every possibility and crossing people off the list. So you have to listen. When someone is coming to you with distressing information, don't necessarily take it at face value, but pay attention and listen. And if there is something that corroborates what they're telling you, you can really help support people who have been put in very dangerous or vulnerable positions.
Incredible. Yeah. It's. I want folks to go to the website justiceforjoanwebster.com. That's justiceforjoanwebster.com. Also, you can go to Genesis, or Genius, that's Genius, bookpublishing.com, Genius, G-E-N-I-U-S, bookpublishing.com. And if you do /products, you'll be able to see the book and all the other things that tie into this. And the book is at Amazon as well. And again, the title is Simple, Safe, and Secret, The 1981 Murder of Joan L. Webster. Our special guest, author Eve Carson, has been very open and real and authentic, steadfast and composed through all of it, including our conversations as well. Eve, thanks so much for joining us on this episode and in this series, and looking forward to hopefully a positive conclusion to all of this work that you've been dedicating your life and your time and your blood, sweat, and tears to, and on behalf of Joan. And it's a beautiful thing that you're doing, and really appreciate your taking time to join us on Close Up Radio this evening as well.
Thank you, Jim. I truly appreciate it.
You are very, very welcome. You take care and keep us posted on all, and I'm sure we'll be chatting more down the line. Author Eve Carson joining us here on Close Up Radio Live. I'm your host, Jim Masters. Thank you for your time this time. Till next time, we appreciate you being with us around the world as well. Very eye-opening, riveting, and inspiring conversation with those audio clips and so much more in this episode. We hope that not only something that you enjoyed, but something that maybe makes you think in your own life and in our world. We thank Eve Carson. We thank you. Stay tuned. We'll be back with another great episode coming up before you know it right here on Close Up Radio Live. Till then, for all of us, thanks for being with us. Take care and be well.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.